Ask the Expert on the Anton Savage Show.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Now, this is our Ask the Experts plot, and I'm delighted to be joined by Pete Wedderburn, a.k.a. Pete the Vet. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Good morning.
Hope you got a good rest and a break and recharge.
Ireland does the Christmas New Year break really well, doesn't it? Yeah, it's total time for a reset, and I love it.
Yeah, completely. There's nothing just quite like having that break, even if I can't believe it is now over. We've had plenty of questions coming in for you through the morning today, and I suppose we might start with the cold, because obviously it's into the minus across multiple parts of the country and down to minus four. Best ways to look after the cats and the dogs and the others who might be indoor, might be outdoor? That's a broad enough question, but any instant tips?
I think the first thing is simply to be aware of your pet's situation, and to be aware that they can't necessarily look after their own surroundings because you're in control. And so you should make sure that you use that control to keep them comfortable and safe. Now, in Ireland, it's rare for pets to suffer very severely because of very cold weather. It's rare for pets to die outside because of the cold. But it does happen sometimes. And so you need to remember that. And in particular, elderly animals and sick animals are very vulnerable. So if you've got elderly or sick pets, then you need to take extra steps to keep them warm that you mightn't have had to do when they were younger. I think the important thing is to also remember that some different types of animal, apart from sick and elderly, also smaller animals with finer coats are much more vulnerable to chilling.
Right.
Because the smaller an animal is, the greater their body surface area to body size, right, weight. What that means is that they lose heat much more quickly than bigger animals, and also the thickness of the coat. So if you've got a Chihuahua or a miniature Dachshund or something, they've got often a very fine coat that doesn't insulate them well at all. Whereas if you've got a big shaggy collie that's got a long coat, well, you know, the dog's not going to be as at risk. So think about the risk of your individual pet. And the final tip I'm going to give really is that you should feed your pet a bit more in the winter, because it takes energy to keep the body warm. And that means that they need a little bit of extra energy during the colder months, because their body's going to have to produce more heat.
Okay.
It's as simple as that.
Give them a bit of extra dinner this evening when they're going to bed. Another question in that's along similar lines. So our new cat has a habit of going under our parked car. Very hard to see him there in the dark mornings. So I'm wondering, is there a way of deterring him from crawling under there? What would you suggest? And obviously, particularly cars that have just been driven and the warm engine, that's what attracts them, isn't it?
It is. And as a vet, unfortunately, I regularly see cases where somebody starts the car and then hears a commotion, because what's happened is that a cat has actually got under the car and up onto the engine itself.
Right.
Because it's really cozy and warm there. And then the engine starts and the cat gets tangled up, and it's a terrible thing. But I do see that sometimes. And apart from that, even just a cat being under the car and you pull away and run over the animal, this does happen as well. So I think the simple thing is to, it's very hard to prevent that, you know, short of putting up a kind of an all-over cover on your car so that animals can't have access to it. People aren't really going to go to those levels. But what you can do is simply be aware of it again, and don't just start your car quickly and drive off. So, you know, be cautious. Just check your car first of all. Have a quick look underneath it.
Yep.
And start the engine and let the car warm up. And in that time, the fact that the engine is on and vibrating, that the cat will nearly always just move away from it.
Okay. You know,
that's a simple thing to do. But how to stop a cat from doing it? They want to do it. If they want to do it, the only thing that will stop them is physical barriers, and that's the complicated bit.
Yeah, that's hard to get around the car unless you're somehow surrounded. I don't even know how you do that. Another one of the questions, and I imagine a lot of people could relate to this. So new baby due in the next couple of months, and of course the dog was the original baby here and has been loved and pampered for however many years that they've had it. If you any sort of tips for one, introducing the two, but then also making sure that the both are happy and the dog isn't feeling put out or resentful of the new screaming presence in their life.
Yeah, it's really good to pay attention to this. Animals are really good at adapting to things that happen gradually. They're not good at adapting to sudden change. So what you should do is introduce the baby by introducing its smell first. So when the baby's born, bring back from the hospital some items of clothing or blankets or whatever associated with the baby, and show those to the pet and let the dog sniff those and engage with those. And so, you know, getting them used to the smell first, and then making the actual physical introductions quite gradual. And when you make the introductions, make sure the animal isn't stressed, and you should do things with the dog to get them less stressed. For example, take them for a good long walk before you introduce the baby, so they're not sort of full of energy. And use, there's some really effective mental toys for dogs. There's a thing called a snuffle ball, which is a fabulous yoke, which is like a felt. It's like the size of a grapefruit, and it's got lots of felt tags on it, and you stuff little treats deep into the felt tags. And so what the dog has to do is they have to snuffle around with their nose and probe with their nose and their tongue and their teeth to get the little treats out. And if they're doing that, then they're completely engaged with that, and they're less likely to be reactive to something new and strange.
Right.
So using these kind of things to get the animal a little bit distracted while they get familiar with the new arrival is a really good thing to do. And lastly, I think you should make sure that you don't change the dog's routine too much. So, you know, continue with the walks that you've always done with them, continue to feed them at the same time, and continue to give them plenty of attention. It's difficult enough because your life begins again, in a sense, when you have a baby in the house. Suddenly everything is very, very, very different. But just don't forget the pet. They're an important part of the family.
Absolutely, they're part of the family too. When you're talking about the sudden changes or sudden shocks, one texter in here saying, on Christmas Day, my two small dogs got a fright when we were popping Christmas crackers. Obviously, we stopped when we realised. Since then, one of them gets very shaky and nervous in the evening time. During the day, he's fine, but yesterday evening, he was very shaky and wanted to leave the kitchen to go to the bedroom. I brought him to my bedroom where I sat with him and rubbed him, and he did eventually calm down. Will this ease over time? And they also supplemented text to say, meant to say he's drinking and eating and still happy to go on walks.
That's a really interesting one. I haven't heard of it before, but it kind of falls into the category of like sudden noises, like fireworks. I hadn't thought of crackers being loud enough to do that. But dogs operate on an emotional level, which is they don't intellectualize like we humans do. So they can't sort of think, oh, that's just crackers, it's nothing to worry about. You know, if they get a fright, they just remember the emotion of the fright. And that can really stay with them for a long, long time. And I think in general, these things do settle just with the passage of time. There are techniques you can use to make it easier for an animal. What I might do in that situation that they're in just now is you might remember this next year, because crackers happen only so intermittently. Remember it next year and pay attention to do something with the animals before the crackers actually come out. And I have some clients who actually have an issue with their pet over Christmas, their pet being so reactive to the new things. And they actually request some calming medication from us every year to give them on the pets on Christmas morning, just so the edge is taken off the animals, so they don't get emotionally distraught about some seasonal happening, which some dogs do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm. Another kind of long question in here for you. So we rescued a 12-week-old kitten 6 months ago. Our older 3-year-old cat hasn't taken well to the new arrival. Both are female. We've tried all the recommended steps, separate rooms, litters, etc., and gentle introductions. We've also tried plug-in pheromones. A few weeks ago, the older one beat up the kitten. We intervened before any damage, but it set us back, and now the kitten is terrified of the cat. We're wondering now if it will ever work. The kitten has never been outside, and we're worried that if she does, the older cat will chase her away. Still living in separate rooms, but the old cat is outside a lot during the day, so we can let the kitten run around. We're planning on getting the kitten spayed this month and to let her outside when she's fully recovered from the operation. She'll then be 9 months old. My questions are, will she be old enough to hold her own, or should we keep her indoors for longer? And is the older cat likely to be more calm after she's spayed?
So there's two questions there. The first one is indoor and outdoor pets. So the story there is that indoor cats live for longer than outdoor cats because they're exposed to fewer risks. There's no traffic, there's no dogs chasing them, there's no accidents likely to happen. So they live for longer, but they're more prone to stress-related illnesses. Okay. Because they can't carry out all the normal behaviours of an outdoor cat, climbing and jumping and so on. So it's just a decision to make. Do you want to have an indoor cat or an outdoor cat? It's a decision. And everybody comes to a different conclusion on that one. In terms of whether the older cat will ever accept the younger cat, I kind of suspect it's unlikely. There's a bit of an illusion that you can sort of gather cats and they'll all be good friends and have a big happy family. That's not true. The only time that you can be pretty sure that cats are going to continuously get on well together is when you get kittens together, where they both arrive in the house at the same time. Now they've both got the shared territory and they're happy to exist with shared territory forever. But when you have an existing cat in situ and another one comes in, well, the other cat is coming into their territory. And some cats just absolutely will not give up on that. And they're very stubborn. Mm. So the best you can do in that situation is to have a divided house, you know, which is to have separate rooms, separate litter trays. And like, it's a bit difficult, really.
Yeah.
But most cats, like, cats don't like fighting. Even the older cat, it doesn't like doing what it did. Like, it feels driven to do that, but it's no fun. And so they're very, that fight was basically a very strong boundary being laid down. And so generally what happens is the younger cat will go, okay, that's a boundary I'm not going to cross again. And so they learn to avoid conflict. And so most cats do learn kind of workarounds. I think you can help that process by creating space for more separation in the house and by doing some sort of smart things like using the vertical space. One of the great things that I don't see often used, but it works really well, is to have wall shelves for cats. You can get dedicated, specially designed shelves that go up your wall and that they've been created to allow cats to use the vertical space in a room. And that'd be a really good thing to have in a household like that. And what the young cat may then do is go up to the top shelf and sit there and look down and feel secure and safe and knowing that it can't be pounced upon by the older cat. So that's you should look at your home with a cat's eye and see how you can use the space most effectively.
Finally then, and if you can in a word or two, just as we're bang out of time, one last question in for you. My dog is 7, English sheepdog, flying to Brazil for the first time. Would he suggest we fly them in cargo or cabin?
Well, obviously, cargo's more pleasant. You know, none of us would like to travel in cargo, would we? So why would pets? So obviously, it's more pleasant, but it's quite difficult to achieve. It's a lot of airlines just won't do it. Mm. You just have to look into the actual the nitty gritty of arrangements with the airline. Little dogs, yes, you can have them often on your lap or whatever. Bigger dogs is. Don't think there's really space for that. I once flew to London with a swan on my lap in the cabin.
I have so many mental images going on right now.
So it can be done. Okay, it was a bit of a PR stunt. But you know, anything is possible. But it's about talking to the airline. It's more the airline's interpretation of the rules necessarily than absolute black and white international regulations, do you know?
Okay. Pete the Vet, thanks so much for coming in and for answering those questions, and a very happy new year to you.
Thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk. Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.